From Akron, Ohio, this is episode 229 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope serval snarker, and then we're going to talk about our top five favorite examples. But first, as always, I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by... Oh, wait. You guys are wearing this.
Sir?
Yeah. No, I was going to describe your clothing, but like not to peek behind the curtain too much. We're recording this right after our last one. So I don't want to like blow up your spot and make it sound like you guys are wearing the same shirt. Like,
say that Eva's in plaid and I'm in flowers.
Okay. In the plaid.
Eva.
And in the flowers.
Sir.
Do you have any shirts with flowers on them, sir?
I'm wearing one Western now. Can't you see it?
Shirts. Yeah, exactly. Western style. Rockabilly and all that.
Yeah, I've got like a couple button downs that have a flowery thing. I like flowers on ties.
Mm.
I think that's a good look. I never wear ties though. Eva, do you have any plaid shirts?
Yeah.
I like plaid too.
I have one of my, you know, the requisite like sweater or sweatshirt you have at work that you just stays at your desk at work that you throw on every day when you're cold. Mine is a Pendleton jacket from the 50s. One of those like kind of boxy plaid jackets with big pockets.
I've been doing fleeces at work. That's been my, my being cold attire is just wearing a fleece.
Mm. Like an actual, like a sheepskin. You just like throw it over your shoulders.
Yeah. No, I bring in the sheep itself.
You have to wrestle it away from somebody else and then you wear it like a trophy.
Yeah, I just like feed it hay or whatever the fuck sheep eat.
What do they eat anyway?
I don't know. What does a sheep eat? No,
I would
but
say yeah, because they're like cows. They would eat the same thing cows
do. Yeah. It's just like, it's one of those things where there's a lot of people who like will work in, at least in my experience, the hospital. I don't know about if this is true for like offices and stuff too, but like a hoodie may be seen as like, oh, you can't wear a hoodie, but you can wear a fleece, which is like the same thing without a hood.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, it's like, I don't like pulling something on and off over my head.
Yeah. But even like a zip up hoodie, it's like, what's the difference between that and a fleece really?
Context.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a silly, like, I don't know. I don't care. So we're talking about serval snarker today, sir. I think this was your idea, correct?
Yeah, and again,
how did this come up? I remember that it was like in the context of something that's like something that happened like five news cycles ago, and now I don't know what the fuck's happening in the news.
I feel
now.
Like it was topical, and I can't remember what it was.
Hmm.
Or maybe it was just something.
Have you guys gotten your lotto, your Ohio vaccine lottery millions yet? We haven't. No. I haven't talked to you on the air about. I haven't gotten mine yet either. So I didn't get to ask you guys. I asked Themo and Kyle this. What are you going to do when your million comes in? Kyle said he's going to open a food truck. I said I was just going to buy a movie theater. Kyle said he could use the food truck and like help serve food for the movie theater. And Themo said he would open up a rival food truck.
Wow. What did you guys do to Themo?
I didn't do anything because I'm running the movie theater.
You guys whacked him?
his business plan was to buy up Kyle's food and then just sell it for slightly cheaper.
Wow.
So,
what happened to Semo?
Well, it's not a great business decision. What are you guys going to do with your million when you get it? If people don't know what we're talking about, you can go back a couple episodes or, you know, some states, California is doing it now too, where they're lottoing off money for
federal aid money.
Yeah, to improve the vaccination rates have at least the infographic that I saw increased. They were dropping everywhere and continue to drop like nationwide. And in Ohio, they spiked.
Yeah, they also that was exactly the same time when places stopped making you make an appointment to get a vaccine and you could walk in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably true.
I refuse to give this lottery any credit for anything valuable. Like.
Well, it's not a lottery though. We're all just getting $1 million. So when your check comes in, what are you going to spend your $1 million on?
I'm burning down somebody's house. And I think it's going to be like one of the councilmen or two of the councilmen in the county where I'm from. So I think, yeah, I
should. This podcast is for parody purposes only.
Yeah. And, yeah. Ah, man.
Sir, what are you doing with your,
what I really do with it?
What would I really actually do with it? I would probably buy ammunition. I tried to think of something funny that would get back at the state for doing that. Yeah, maybe I'd use a little bit to buy a drone and like, I don't know, drop rotten eggs on the governor's house or something like that. But yeah, realistically, I'd probably, you know, buy a house, buy ammunition, stuff like that. I wouldn't get an electric car.
You would not?
No, I would not get the Tesla. Maybe I'd try to get an electric. I'm going to wait till the Toyota truck, till they come out with an electric truck. I'm not getting the Ford F-150.
You're not going to follow Elon? You're not going to blow it all on NFTs and
I'm not going to buy crypto. Nick, have you bought any crypto?
No. No, I'm not a...
Don't get left behind, man.
I know. I know people who do it, and I just like... I don't
buy a little bit of it.
I don't care. I have $5 in one of the cryptos. I think Bitcoin.
Oh, so you're like, no, I don't have any. Oh, I have...
Oh, you have $5.
No, $5 because I like signed up for an account, and they're like, oh, we'll give you $5 free. And then I was like, I don't want to do this. Like... I don't know. It's a whole fucking thing I'd have to learn. And
that's Nick. He hates learning.
I do. And they're bad for the school. Yeah. And they're terrible for the environment. Like all these crypto things are just like awful. They're, I mean, NFTs, yeah, but why NFTs are worse. With that?
Like, you know,
NFTs are definitely the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. NFTs aren't just like, also I just like the people online who are very into crypto seem...
Oh, it's bad.
That's the problem.
It seem insufferable. The NFT thing, like, sure, it's, like, terrible for the environment, but mostly it's just so cringy to me. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You're, like, you're selling off, like, a fucking JPEG? Who cares? Like, so, I don't respect it. Not into it.
Definitely.
The NFT thing is just awful. I think, you know, as horrible as it is, I do feel like there's going to be a segment. I mean, crypto's not going anywhere. I wonder if there's like some people feel like we might actually get to like a sustainable crypto because the people who are kind of in that space will push for them to use renewable energy and stuff like that. Just to get people off their backs. So,
yeah,
I think, I mean, anything that's going to, if anything that gives us a way to like pressure right wing communities for stuff like that, I think could be good. Yeah. The whole thing is just depressing.
Yep.
Yep. So, back to the initial question, sir. What was it about? Do you even remember what it was that kind of sparked this?
I'm going to say random troll pearl. Yeah,
I think it
was. You guys are saying you remember it was. I feel like it was a random one of these is a random troll pearl.
I think it was like at the end of one of the episodes.
Yeah, we talked about it at the end of the bet. Maybe
must have been.
I think maybe it was just realized we'd never talked about it.
Yeah,
that like, so, I mean, it's a huge trope. There's so many characters.
Yeah. So what is it about this trope that like, why did you want to?
I think what's cool about it is it, you know, class is a huge tension in America and it always has been. And something like that, that is like, well, you know, wholly from Europe, from European tradition. It used to be, it's called Butler because it's from basically like the bottler. It used to be the wealthy estates, the most expensive thing that they had was wine. So the person, their servant who had the highest level of responsibility was the guy that took care of all the wine bottles. And that just kind of slowly turned over time into being the guy who was like the head of the house, the estate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many, like, you know, there's so much class stuff that goes into it, both like the relations overseas and how that changed over time. And here, like, he's not on my list yet. Robert Roberts was actually the first Black person to have a book published by a major commercial publisher, like 1827. And he published this book on how to be a butler. And it like kind of elevated the conversation that it wasn't just this unskilled labor thing that, you know, he showed that you had to be like, you had to be knowledgeable, all these different recipes and medical stuff and accounting, all these different things. And kind of, he later became an abolitionist.
Yeah.
Just, you know, so here there's that aspect of it. It's like class and race, like so many of the butlers, even like the really famous ones. When you look at like the most top 10 butlers list, a lot of them are guys like Benson and kind of famous Black butlers in America. So it's just a really interesting thing. And then it goes, it's also like anytime you have these characters that are like they're in a lower class, yet they're able to essentially rib or make fun of, they're given like an extra social freedom
mm-hmm.
that other people aren't. Because, you know, whether that's just proximity to the people in power or them being so necessary, the folks in power understanding that this person is absolutely necessary to my survival. I can't really do without them, which is another
way. They raise right? my children, and I sure as hell don't want to do that myself. Yeah.
So. Exactly. So,
have you guys seen The Exterminating Angel, the Buñuel movie?
Maybe not that no. one. However, he and I share a birthday.
Oh, that's a cool birthday. Sir's got a good famous director. I won't blow up your birthday in here, but I know you have a good one of my favorite directors is one of your birthday buddies. Yeah. So in that movie, it's about like all these rich people who get like stuck in a room in a big house, and there's not like anything actually keeping them there. They're just like metaphysically stuck there for some inexplicable reason. And it's like a bunch of rich bougie characters, but then the only other person who's stuck with them is their butler. And I read an interview with Buñuel and they asked him about it. And they're like, that's, you know, that's interesting that you have all these rich people. And then it's not just a butler, it's the head butler, because all the other staff, these people like are stuck there. The staff, for whatever reason, all felt compelled to leave. They're like all the servants and the cooks and the maids are all just like, oh yeah, I have to leave. I have to go before all these people get trapped there. Except the head butler. And they asked him why, and he's like, well, he's the head butler. He's like in the same class they are. And I thought that was an interesting comment. That person was more in line with the rich bourgeois characters than he was with like the working class people who are ostensibly in the same class as him because he was in charge.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting point. All right. You guys want to jump into our top fives?
Yeah. Well, maybe it should be mentioned that I think we expand it like. I think there's more than just butlers on.
Oh yeah, it was.
I have another kind of subordinate like character.
Yeah. Subordinate is mm-hmm. like the more, I think more accurate. And it's all sort of playing with the same ideas. Like the it doesn't need to be like literally a butler. It can be, you know, the secretary who's, you know, getting dumped on by the like asshole boss, but is snarking back. It plays the same role even if it's not like literally in the household, I think. So Eva, go to you first. What's your number five?
Well, we all have one in common, don't we? Do we want to do that first or last?
We might as well No, the one that I thought about that and I was like, yeah, I can't think of any like funny lines that he says. Other than the Lamborghini. We're talking about Jeffrey. You got to have Jeffrey on the list, right?
Yeah. So we'll all start. We'll talk about Jeffrey, then we'll all start at four.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was.
He's an Olympian.
He was an Olympian.
Yeah. Like, Loki, the funniest character on that show?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would say for sure. Yeah. And kind of like the heart of the show.
Oh yeah, like definitely. And it's funny that I don't know, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. He's like as much of a member of the family as anyone else in it, and yet he's still like sort of in their employ, which is weird. I don't know. He's a great character.
And Jeffrey Barbara Butler is his full name.
He's also, I think, the snarkiest of the ones on my list. Like very willing to just like stick it right back to people.
Mm-hmm. He was the butler during the 70s for Led Zeppelin. He was also a Greco-Roman wrestler.
Yeah, that's an interesting element to a lot of the like butler or housekeeper trope, where we find out what kind of person they are outside of their job, you know, where we find out, oh, he used to do this, or some other TV shows in the 70s and 80s would have, you know, where somebody's, you know, their relative would come visit, or they would have to go home for some kind of family thing, and it's like all of a sudden like, oh, you're a person outside of your job.
Mm-hmm.
I remember as a kid wondering why none of the episodes happened on Jeffrey's day off. Like, why didn't he ever have a day off?
Because they needed him.
I wonder, did Jeffrey ever, so he never had a day off on the show? There's one where he thinks that he wins the lottery.
Yeah, there's a couple of times where he was going to quit or he was going to leave, but I can't remember any episode where they were like, well, I have to do this myself because Jeffrey's got the day off. Maybe it did happen and I just don't remember it, but that was something I always thought about when I was a kid, because I loved Mary Poppins a lot too, and I always wondered what they did on their day off. It's kind of hard. I imagine it would be hard to have a day off when you're still physically at work.
He does have a day off, and only reason I thought of it is because I just saw this scene for some reason. I think when I was doing research for this, he's still there. He's still at the house, and
isn't he like dressed down?
Hillary's boyfriend asks, you know, why is he here on his day off? And he says, correct, but you overlooked one fact. I have no life. Mm-hmm. Which kind of speaks to what you were saying, that he lives there. So, you know.
Yeah, if he's just going to hang out at home because it's his day off, he's still kind of at work.
Yeah. But I feel like I remember a joke about him like not being dressed the way he's usually like impeccably dressed in a suit. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know. I remember seeing him in like gym shorts or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and his character is really kind of, he's kind of the stand-in for us, that he gets to walk in and say, he gets the one-liner, and then, or he gets to comment on what they're all doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then the crowd claps and he leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, you know, and I guess a subversion maybe of kind of the character, like Benson, who was the black butler to these wealthy white folks, you know. They could have tried to just make him like a white character, yet I think making him British was a big deal. For one, like, how many of us really, like, how many other black British characters were there, like, on screen at that time when we were kids? Like, that was one of the only ones I can remember, and it kind of just made you realize, and oh yeah, there's is a whole, this part of the diaspora is in the UK.
So, Eva, we know your number five. Again? Yeah. What's your number four then?
My number four is going to be, let's see. I'm going to say it's Mr. Belvedere. Did you guys watch Mr. Belvedere?
I don't know about Mr. Belvedere.
Didn't he have to take 2 days off of work because he sat on his nuts?
What?
Do you guys not know this? One time he sat on his balls and he had to miss work?
No.
Yep. I remember that.
That's a thing I see online all the time. I don't know if it's true.
You see it online all the time?
You would be surprised how often I see this.
I would be, in fact. And it makes me wonder what kind of neighborhood you're in on the internet that it keeps coming up. No. But yeah, Mr. Belvedere was like late 80s, early 90s sitcom where I can't remember if it's all... Like, was he writing his book, like, at the end, of, like, every day he was writing about it? Or if the whole show was, like, a flashback and he was writing the book, like, at some point afterward? I don't really remember. It had Bob Uecker playing a character very much like himself. He was the, you know, the husband and the father. Mr. Belvedere also had the first character on a sitcom who had AIDS. Mm. There was a kid in the, like, the teenage boys class. It was kind of like a Ryan White kind of a character. Kind of like Jeffrey, you know, like, you know, one-liners about his, you know, his charges, so to speak. Now what?
The link Sarah just sent us, which is, this is actually a person I follow on Twitter. It's Patty Moe. He's the person who makes the most Mr. Belvedere jokes, but it's one of those like prompt tweets that's what would someone have to whisper in your ear for this to happen? And it's a picture of somebody whispering and then a picture of goosebumps and hair sit on end. And his quote tweet is, one time the guy who played Mr. Belvedere sat on his own balls and then had to stop filming for a couple of days.
I've never seen Nick laugh as hard.
It's so funny.
Sir, what's your number four?
And oh, wow. Oh man. Let's see. I think I'm going to go with, so I got four left. My list is all messed up. I just take some off. I'm going to go with Rosie the Robot. And
Jetsons?
What was that, Nick?
From the Jetsons? From
the Jetsons, yeah. From the Jetsons. So Rosie the Robot. And I just thought of it. And I think what's so creepy to me about Rosie the Robot is it's that episode where they show the, like, the serious class problems that the Jetsons universe has. Like, so they're like
people on the ground.
Yeah. Like all the people who are like on the surface of the planet and the Jetsons are like living in poverty. I mean, it's like Brave New World type thing where they're like, or like 1984, they're like completely uneducated. They're like living in filth. Like, and clearly part of that had to have progressed because of labor being taken up by automatons like Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just terrible. It's like looking into the future. Yeah. So the Jetsons, I mean, it's a horrible glimpse into our totalitarian labor situation.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, what's your number four?
I have no idea.
After that Mr. Belvedere thing, I'm like, all turned around.
Why have you, neither of you have said Mr. Belvedere? And I'm just really disappointed. I had to do
Mr. it. Mr. Balvedere. Wow.
All right. I'm going to go with a twofer. And it's a character and then the character that it inspired later. Mrs. Doubtfire from Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh. Speaking of Robin Williams, yikes. But
keep bringing up Robin Williams.
I know, but
two
I think
weeks in a row.
We well, got to talk about how bad this movie is.
Well, the real one that I want to have on my list is not that, because Mrs. Featherbottom from Arrested Development. Just because everything David Cross does is Mrs. Featherbottom is pretty funny. Yeah, Mrs. Doubtfire. I don't remember it very well. Somebody online. Yeah, somebody online had said that there was like an extended cut, or if you were maybe not an extended cut, but if you had all the stuff that was like,
yeah, that was shot. Yeah.
It was shot. It would be like an NC-17 movie, and yeah. I can only imagine how fucking horrible that would be.
Well, I mean, like, if you just take the plot of Mrs. Doubtfire, mm-hmm. which is estranged husband and father puts on a full body costume.
Gaslights his whole family.
He can infiltrate his family's house and assume some kind of a role as a caretaker that he didn't have when he existed in their house.
Ugh.
Like, that's fucking not to disturbing. Mention
the transphobia of the film.
I didn't even get
the transphobia that. Of the film. There's the and so I think I sent it to the chat that whole the trailer reshot as a horror film.
Yeah.
Like it's just terrifying. And oh man. So many bad lessons.
Well, that's what I mean by the NC-17. I mean the supposed like would be NC-17 if they had all the footage still together cut. That movie would be so homophobic and transphobic.
Mort's got a lot of opinions about Mrs. Doubtfire, apparently.
Yeah, but it did inspire Mrs. Featherbottom, which is obviously like a spoof on Mrs. Doubtfire with Tobias. Trying to get the attention of his daughter, who, like, conversely from Mrs. Doubtfire, which works, it doesn't work swimmingly, but he pulls off the ruse convincingly for a while. Mrs. Featherbottom is just like, clearly, nobody's ever falling for it because it's such a bad, it's like, what would happen if you tried to do that in real life? It's just so stupid that everyone just like sort of ignores you and lets you go on like cleaning up the house. So yeah, I like that bit a lot. Eva, what is your number three?
Oh, one more thing about Mrs. Doubtfire. The other thing that's disturbing to me is that Mrs. Doubtfire is a lot like what I'm probably going to look like when I get old. There's like a lot of Mrs. Doubtfire that's what my grandma looked like, and really just confirmed by the fact that my dad's brother resembles Robin Williams physically, although not in personality at all. And incidentally, they both have Lewy body dementia. But Mrs. Doubtfire is, you know, a lot like what I'm probably going to look like in 40-ish years. So that's just always been weird. Let me see. What do I want next? Okay, so my next one is my number three. Not a butler, however, another subordinate character, the limousine driver / general, you know, kind of sidekick kind of character. And it's in one of his only non-Pauly roles that I can think of, Burt Young. And he's played the character of Lou in Back to School, starring Rodney Dangerfield. And one of, you know, Lou doesn't say a whole lot in that movie. But there's at the beginning when Dangerfield's character is talking about his new wife and, you know, this like new fancy house they live in and something. He says like, oh, it seems like it was just yesterday. Lou says, and you know what a lousy day yesterday was. He's kind of, there's a couple scenes where he's kind of like the intermediary between Dangerfield and his kid, where he tries to like talk to the kid about how much his dad cares about him and stuff like that. And you get the feeling that they were probably maybe friends as children. And then this is his way of kind of setting him up or taking care of him as an adult by giving him this job. But mm-hmm. It's a great movie.
Back to School is definitely one of the better Dangerfield films.
Oh yeah. Sir, what's your number three?
You're looking at the thing I just sent.
Yeah. Oh man. So my number three is, I'm going to go with Owen Burnett from the Disney cartoon Gargoyles, which any fan of animation is one of the best 90s cartoons ever. Essentially, they do a whole like story arc where it's Midsummer Night's Dream. So it's Oberon and all of these like fantasy creatures from the Shakespeare play. And Puck is one of the creatures who in the play is like this really mischievous kind of trickster character. And in the series, he disguises himself. And this is a huge spoiler. So I guess if you haven't seen it, I mean, sorry about that. Yeah. In the series, he disguises himself as this like really straight-laced personal assistant to David Xanatos, who's like the big bad. It's kind of like a Tony Stark.
The Xanatos Gambit.
Essentially he like, it's cool to see the character have to, he has to take on human form, and he tries to pick the most boring kind of like almost kind of like stuck up English servant character that he can. And it's a great reveal, and kind of like you get to see the contrast of the character. It's pretty cool. And then I just love that whole arc and taking Shakespeare's his work and kind of like changing it around, adding all this action stuff was really good. Nick, what is your number three?
Yeah, I'm going to go with not a butler type character, but more like a subordinate, Iago from Aladdin, which is the parrot or some kind of bird. He's a parrot, right? Anyways, he's voiced by one Gilbert Gottfried, and he's the villain Jafar's hench bird, who helps him commit his evil schemes. But he's always talking back to both Jafar and the Sultan, just full of sass. But no one takes his sass too seriously because he's just a talking bird. It's kind of like how Stewie Griffin will say things, but nobody really pays it any mind because it's like a baby saying it. This is sort of this, like, it's just a bird. People aren't getting too pissed off about it. But
man, Gilbert Gottfried. Wow.
Yep.
And why did he get canceled? I can't even remember now.
What's the 9/11 joke?
Was it a 9/11 joke?
You what can't get canceled for a 9/11 joke.
I mean, for one,
it was
who has ever been canceled?
He did it 3 weeks after the September 11th attacks. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just don't believe it. It's never happened. And you know why? How I know?
Because Kevin Spacey got cast in a movie.
Still working. Yeah, exactly. Because he's still working. Mm-hmm. Like. Mm-hmm. Emily Wilder got fired from her job. That's called getting canceled.
Only get canceled by like right wing shitheads lobbying your newspaper company
when you get fired. Yeah, or you get canceled by being fired by a systemically racist and colonial organization for speaking out. Gilbert Gottfried, though, he also made a joke about the Japanese tsunami, which
that's the one I think I'm thinking of.
That one's more recent. Yeah. I mean, that was was 10 years
ago. He lost the Affleck commercials.
Oh, yeah. You're right. He did. So he did. I mean,
he's still got to keep working in Hollywood, but whatever.
Yeah. Eva, what's your number two?
We didn't skip you?
No, I just did Iago.
My number two is another late 80s TV show, late 80s, early 90s, I guess, Empty Nest. Mm. And it's Park Overall's character, Laverne, who was the secretary. And yeah, I think she was just a secretary. I don't think she was a nurse. She had great one-liners and, you know, comments about the staff and stories about where she was from back home. And she was cool. I really liked her when I was young because I wanted to be like her. It seemed like she, you know, the secretary character in a lot of stories like that is the one who actually runs everything. Mm-hmm. Like she actually knew who was coming and going, what needed to be done. And then she had like a whole thing like on the side where she worked on cars. And I can't remember if she raced cars or her husband did, or like the guys in her family did, but I just thought she was really cool. And then later, like later seasons, they took on, they like moved doctor's offices and it had, gosh, I can't remember her name. Her last name's Warfield. She was on Night Court. It's the other doctor.
Man, I can't think who it was.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But in any case, sir, what's your number two?
That was a good one. Empty Nest. So I'm up next.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Chance the Gardener from Hal Ashby's Being There, 1979.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, so anyhow, he's this kind of middle-aged guy who has been raised in this rich guy's like mansion, essentially, as his gardener, and has no evidence of who he is, where he comes from. And then eventually when the rich guy dies, he goes on this adventure where he gets caught up in like basically international and political affairs. And it's a lot, you know, now that I think of it, it's kind of similar to Forrest Gump in that way, or Forrest Gump is similar to it. It's just like a lesser Forrest Gump being like a lesser version in some ways.
Yeah, it's kind of specific to one event.
It's a much better movie than Forrest Gump.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Being There is just incredible. Like it really shows kind of the limits of the term that folks use, you know, white privilege, you know, in spaces and in society to kind of just drift by and be accepted and be assumed to be intelligent. He's not a snarker. It's almost kind of inverse in that he doesn't say these clever, snarky things. He says these really simple, very, mm-hmm. these kind of like empty platitudes all the time.
But people take them to be prophetic. And
exactly.
What I like about the movie is that the only person who's like aware of it's not even bullshit because he's not doing it on purpose. Yeah. Like he's just, that's just how he is. The only person who's, I won't use the term his bullshit, but the only person who like really knows what's going on is the other, I don't know if she was a maid or somebody else who's employed at who's employed at the same house that
this black woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she sees him on TV and she's like, what is everyone doing? Like, says, is everyone, yeah.
She says what part of the whole point of the movie is that this is a white man's world, that he can, with no education, essentially be on TV representing the president. You know, there's that scene where they're basically, he ends up fooling this whole group of people into thinking that he's really wealthy. And part of it's because he has the clothes that he's taken from the old man's house. Mm-hmm. And they're like these fine fabrics and like things that, you know, suits that aren't even made anymore. And it just,
he repeats really, what they say.
Yeah, exactly. You know, a huge just kind of indictment of like the upper class in America and the kind of emptiness of their lack of substance of like politics in our country is a lot of it too. I think it has, and of course it has like this incredible ending. Yet one of the things that's left out, or that aside from the magical realism of the ending, is the like behind the scenes like machinations of the guys who are trying to maneuver him into being the next president.
Mm-hmm.
Just really a great, one of the best Hal Ashby films, and one of the best Peter Sellers movies too.
Yeah, he's great in it. He died not too long after this and was nominated for an Oscar for it, but didn't win. And yeah, this was like his last, I don't know, certainly his last major work, but it might have even been his last work at all.
Yeah. And I should note, like, there's a couple of like kind of uncomfortable moments in it. Like, there's a couple of moments with him dealing with black characters. And one of the things that I noticed the last watch was that endears him. The way that he's relating, like he makes this kind of a comment to another wealthy guy who like takes him in. That guy is black doctor. And he relays this story that of something that happened to him earlier. And he's, again, just being genuine, being himself and relaying a story. And he doesn't really understand what happened about his encounter with these black children. And the wealthy, kind of the dying tycoon that takes him in, sees this. And that endears him further to Chance, because he imagines, oh, he's given this subordinate a hard time. He's kind of ribbing this black guy who's in my service. And it just further kind of tells him, oh, okay, he's one of us. He's like mm-hmm. me. Like, there's so many layers to the film. It's really, I think it should be more widely watched for sure.
Yeah, I didn't see it until like earlier this year, just a few months ago. Isn't the end credits outtakes from the scene where he's talking to the doctor?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great, like,
what a tonal shift right there at the end.
Yeah. More people should use outtakes from, the only other person I know who does that is Jackie Chan. Like more outtakes is the end credits.
Nick, what is your number two?
Who knows? I'm still like stuck in Mr. Belvedere head. No, I'm going with Woodhouse from Archer. So Archer is like a people aren't familiar with it. It's a cartoon about a like a bunch of secret agents who are all terrible people. One of the few, like, for the most part, good characters, or like certainly kind characters in the show, is Woodhouse, who's Archer's much older butler, who's basically like he's not even aware of this, but he's really like a surrogate father to him, because he's been with him since he was a kid. His mother was like very neglectful and like a bad mother, and Woodhouse was always taking care of him as a kid and always takes care of him even in the modern day as an adult, which involves everything from like just general taking care to cleaning up crimes and dealing with the women that Archer brings over. And there's always like lots of drug use and people getting fucked up. So that's like Woodhouse's burden, but he does every now and then get the chance to snark back. And sometimes this even comes in the form of like, I think he like knocks Archer out at least once, just when he's like sick of him. So he'll give it back when he needs to, but it's done so infrequently that when he does it always lands a nice punch. Usually he's just like the person who Archer kind of beats up on and like clearly abuses. So it's nice when Woodhouse gets his. And he's also got like, they give him a backstory and everything, and he's got like, he's like a war hero, I think. So really interesting character. The voice actor who played him passed away a few years ago, and they actually like had his character pass away in the show rather than recast him. I think they did recast him with another voice actor just for like a season or part of a season. But then after that, they sort of just like wrote the character out and had him actually pass away in the show, which I think is like, I prefer
that when people die in real life. Like, I think The Simpsons did the same thing with Mrs. Krabappel. Mm-hmm. Instead of like having a new voice actor, they just had Mrs. Krabappel actually die.
She died, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's like I don't know, for some reason that feels more respectful to me than just like recasting the voice actor.
Mm-hmm. So,
I think the name Woodhouse is from somebody who is almost on my list, actually. So you guys ever heard of P.G. Woodhouse?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, he wrote the Jeeves character, who's kind of like one of the trope.
Originator.
This. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kept it off my list because I did read a couple of the stories, yet I must have forgotten that the first one featured a lot of blackface. I was just like, yeah. I mean, not surprising for a novel from 1919. Yeah. Man.
Yeah. I was watching, have you guys ever seen Swing Time?
I don't think I've watched it, no.
So Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, and it's like,
yeah,
they have some nice, like some really great, obviously, dance scenes and like a couple nice musical numbers. And there's like all these bits, and it's kind of cute and romantic. And then towards the end, he's about to do a dance number, and he starts putting something in his hands, and he's like rubbing his hands together. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, why is he rubbing his hands together? And he's just slapping the stuff on his face, and Nellie and I are watching it. We both at the same time are just like, oh fuck, like, what are you doing?
No.
Like, why?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And who was it was it Bill Robinson that Fred Astaire ripped off, or was it another dancer?
Oh, I think.
Yeah, it's Bill Robinson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just picked up Behind the Burnt Cork Mask by William J. Maher. Early blackface minstrelsy and antebellum American popular culture, folks. That's for your book recommendation of the episode.
Yeah, it was a surprise blackface. Not one of the better surprises you can get while watching a movie, I'm gonna say. Eva, what is your number one serval snarker?
I got to say, I was not expecting Mr. Belvedere to cast this big of a shadow over this episode. Yeah.
You know what he wasn't expecting? Having to miss a few days of work.
Yeah.
Wow. So my number one, I guess it's Mary Poppins.
Mm.
Yeah. I loved Mary Poppins so much when I was a kid, and I was like early preschool age, I was like 3, that I changed my name to Mary Poppins. That wore off, I think, by the time I got to nursery school, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me as an adult, because I don't really like musicals. And there's a lot of parts of Mary Poppins that make me really uncomfortable that I don't like. But I guess I liked her enough as a character when I was 3. You know, she shows up. She's got a cool bag of stuff. She's practically perfect in every way. She gets to kind of tell her boss what to do. And it doesn't seem like anybody else stands up to Mr. Banks that way. She goes on fun dates with Dick Van Dyke.
I've watched that with Evie like semi-recently, or not all of it, because it's quite...
It's kind of long.
It's over 2 hours, which I think is way too long for like a family movie or a kid's movie, because it just like, it's hard for anything to hold their attention that long. But especially like, it's not the fastest paced. It takes a long time to like get to the heart, like the meat of the movie. But she loves the bag so much. Like, she talked about it for weeks after just seeing it once, about how she has all this stuff in her bag, and like, how does she have a coat rack in her bag? The bag's like only a foot big, and the coat rack's like the size of a person.
Yeah. And that's a cool shot too, as she's pulling everything out, you know?
Yeah. It's a good movie. I made a joke on Twitter that, people like to make fun of Dick Van Dyke's accent work. is being bad, but I don't think it's bad. That's just how British people actually sound. Ah, we love our British listeners. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
Yeah, I just love that. I didn't see that new Mary Poppins movie. However, yeah, neither did I. I like that Dick Van Dyke actually lived long enough to play the old man without needing any makeup this time.
Yeah.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah,
he's still, your number one.
He's still working. I think he's like 95.
Yeah, he's getting real close to 100.
Yeah. Yeah, sir.
So my number one is Kato from the Green Hornet.
Yeah.
So the Green Hornet, for those who don't know, was a 1936 radio hero that then became a 60s television show. And that was kind of Bruce Lee's like major breakout television role. And it was like a really big deal to, like, I know for me it was a big deal. It was like from like growing up, it was an early kind of like, I don't know, I guess like teaching moment. And because I remember my dad would tell us stories about like behind the scenes stuff from these things. And a lot of the story of Bruce Lee on that show was him fighting for more representation as an Asian action hero. The directors wanted him to just kind of like punch and like do like the cowboy fighting. And he pushed to have Kung Fu like done by his character, and always like pushed to have more screen time. And it quickly became obvious that he was the real martial artist. And like, it was a big topic of conversation, like at our house. And, you know, my dad would always tell us that back when they were kids, that was why they tuned into the show. It wasn't to see Britt Reed, the Green Hornet. It was to watch Kato and just watch how badass he was. And just a huge turning point for not only like Asian actors, yet just kind of minorities in general, having those kinds of like prominent action roles. And yeah, just a great character. One of the best costumes, I think, from that era, because it's so simple and yet, and you instantly kind of, you know, it's the driver costume, yet what he ends up doing with it, with the mask, is it just makes it really iconic. And yeah, Bruce Lee is great.
Yeah. That show only lasted one season. And, there's, a lot of evidence that the, show like what started popular, like ratings started to dip. And there was a clear solution to get more viewers, which would be to put fucking Bruce Lee in a more prominent role, because he was Bruce Lee. And instead, they're just like, yeah, we're not going to do that. And the show tanked, and it only lasted one season because of that, when they had a very, like,
I guess overseas, Bruce said that it was known as the Kato Show.
Yeah, yeah. They had a very clear out to their viewership troubles that they opted to not solve by not even needing to recast or hire a new person, just maybe rewrite some of the plot lines and put his face on a little bit more. But they didn't do it, so
didn't do it.
Fuck them.
Logic of colonialism. Nick, what is your number one?
What is my number one? My number one is a character from a movie called A New Leaf, which has very quickly become, I saw it for the first time last year, and I've watched it a few times since then. It's very quickly become one of my favorite movies. This is an Elaine May movie starring Elaine May and Walter Matthau. And the plot of the movie is basically Walter Matthau is a spoiled rich kid, only he's like 45 or 50. And he is broke, and he needs to trick a rich woman into marrying him. And that is Elaine May's character. But so he's broke because he's lived his whole life like way too lavishly. He had all this money and just spent it because some combination of like him being irresponsible and kind of stupid and kind of arrogant and kind of naive. But he also has a butler who knows that he needs this person to succeed in this endeavor for him to
maintain employment. So he like encourages him as he's trying to pull this scam to like basically trick someone into marrying him. And hold on, I'm trying to find the quotes that he, so one of his quotes, he's talking to Henry, the butler is talking to the Walter Matthau character, Henry, and he's trying to like build up his spirits. And he says, how many men these days require the services of a gentleman's gentleman? How many men have your devotion to form, sir? You have managed in your own lifetime, Mr. Graham, to keep alive traditions that were dead before you were born. And I just love that, those lines and that line delivery, because he's not being like overly snarky, but just with the words that he's saying, it's kind of clear that he's aware that this job doesn't really exist in that form anymore. And while Henry is trying to scam people, he's also pulling his own scam. So it's not snark in attitude, but it's more like the subversiveness is similar to the snark level that a lot of these other characters we've been talking about are giving. That movie is so funny. All right.
I don't know if I've seen it.
Yeah, I did. I hadn't seen it until a year ago, but I don't watch that many comedies. And when I find one that I like a lot, I will watch it over and over and over again. And this has become the newest incarnation of that. So did you guys have any others that were close?
No, I think I mentioned them.
I thought about Tim Curry's character from Clue.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Curry is always a good pick.
Yeah. What about you, Eva? Any that you thought about that didn't quite make it?
Not really. Like, the only other one I could really think of was the one on Rick and Morty that was Mr. Beauregard.
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
It was
the one where they keep having all the memories of
things the fake,
that happen.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought of, there were a couple that were just, you know, that I didn't like Minute from Sin City.
Mm, yeah.
The Black Driver. Stefan from Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
All right. Do we have plans for what we should do on the next episode?
Let's hit that trope roll.
Oh.
You doing it or am I doing it?
I got it. Let's see. Random trope. Glass slipper. Conspicuous possession, often a piece of clothing, which becomes significant when its owner disappears and only the object is left behind. Jack the Ripoff.
What is that? I like the name of it.
So basically copycat like killers. What would some examples be though?
I got heavy metal.
Which one is that?
Heavy metal.
The
music.
What? Oh, like the car, like the Bakshi cartoon, or what are we talking about?
No, the music, the genre of music.
That's on TV tropes.
Yeah,
that's weird. Loads and loads of roles, where one actor plays a considerable number of roles in a single work.
I just got romantic comedy. Do you guys want to talk about rom-coms?
We've never heard rom-coms?
I don't think so.
I don't not want to talk about it yet. I just don't want to. Well, what if we do? I would say let's do romance films. One of my favorites my favorite of all time. Just watched last night.
What is it?
Well, I save it for the show.
Right.
Why don't you have a Letterboxd?
I do have a Letterboxd.
He does have a Letterboxd. He never uses it.
Well, you can actually see, you can see what I'm watching though if, if you log into a certain person's. Some of what I'm watching. Yeah. Yeah. I should actually organize my Letterboxd into like I, when I watched that last night, I was like, man, I should make just a definitive
box and I follow you. You just never do anything.
I just don't, I haven't uploaded. I should make like a top 10 great, you know, my favorite films. This would definitely be on there. I could say a romance episode would be good.
Yeah, I'll do a romance episode. The one that I just random trope buttoned, unrelated, but Bloodsport.
Is this going to be like when Demo mixed up the lists? Like, I'll do a Bloodsport list for the romance episode, or...
I think Bloodsport could be pretty good. I just, yeah.
Didn't you guys already do a Most Dangerous Game episode?
Yeah.
Though?
Yeah, yeah, we have.
The lottery, the vaccine lottery, has got me thinking a lot about Running Man.
I feel like Bloodsport could be, because I feel like Most Dangerous Game got really specific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloodsport could be all different kinds of things. So.
We'll think about it. We'll keep it. Keep it in mind. All right. Well, as always, we will throw it to John Ducker for where to find us. But if you have examples of serval snarkers, let us know it on thetropes@gmail.com. As always, I have been Nick.
I've been Sir.
Eva.
And
we don't know how to end it without Kyle.
And there's no Kyle.
On the Tropes Podcast. tvtropes.org/podcast/onthetropes onthetropes@gmail.com onthetropes.redbubble.com facebook.com/onthetropes twitter.com/onthetropes patreon.com On the Tropes.